This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Transgender Point of View is an Australian news and current affair panel talk show.
Airing weekly and hosted by Joy 94.9.
Transgender people come from every region around the world, racial and ethnic backgrounds and faith communities.
Chances are that you've met a transgender person, even if you don't know it.
But there are still many misconceptions about trans people.
And as a transgender person, there are a lot
of questions asked of us every day.
What's this about using they as a pronoun?
Isn't letting a trans person use my bathroom dangerous?
Do I refer to you as he, she, it, or they?
So what's your real name?
Are you a drag queen?
What's the difference between sex and gender, and why does it matter so much?
Did you have the operation?
What is stealth?
How does someone know they are transgender?
Really random questions.
Are you sure you're not just super gay?
You must be a transvestite.
What bathroom do you use?
Will I be able to have sex?
What does cis mean?
Welcome to Trans POV on Joy 94.9 with Anastasia, Rowan and Karen.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey.
How are you guys?
Lovely, thank you.
What have you guys been up to?
You can't
apart from scheming.
Me that. I have the most boring life in the world.
No, honey. I think these are things. So I, as a person with 65 pairs of shoes and 123 lipsticks, anybody who owns like two pairs of shoes...
Also two pairs of pants.
Yeah.
My mum had to yell at me this year because I used to buy one pair of pants a year and then I buy another pair every Christmas. And she thought that was extreme because I have like one very small box worth of clothes.
Which is so neat when you move.
Well, no, really, it's not for any like specific political reason. It's because I refuse to spend money on it because I want to spend all my money literally buying books and I just can't like bring myself to buy anything.
Yeah.
But it's not a good habit. I need to own more things. I can't go to weddings.
I've been down that path. I used to hoard books until I had to sell them. And also because I had moved throughout the years, I realized how heavy books are. So, yeah.
I used to move with less and less stuff each time. And then I got married and now we have a house full of furniture, things like that.
I look forward to that day where I can sort of exercise and work out like that.
But coming up in the show today, we have an interview with Dr. Kate Nambia, who is running an amazing program in the UK, in the National Health Service, sort of following on our discussion last week about our public service, sort of getting not a perfect system, but a system that is more ahead than ours. Mm. A little look into that.
I also wanted to call out, we had an amazing message from Jodie in Maine, USA, who is a writer and poet, and she wanted to thank you guys in particular for the podcasts that she accesses every week. Yeah. So hi Jodie, if you're out there, I really enjoyed looking at your stuff.
Yeah, I read it as well. You showed it to me today.
It's really, really beautiful. See, moments like those just really help keep you moving as well, you know?
Yeah.
It's just so warm and nice.
So if anyone else wants to give us an ego boost, or if you have any suggestions for the show, please message us on Trans POV on Joy 94.9 on Facebook, or email us at transpov@joy.org.au.
If you have any piece of poet that you would like us to speak on the air, you know, we can do that too. Yeah, thank you.
Also, this week for our artist highlight is an artist I love for a very long time. CJ Run was born in Germany, but they're from Afro-Caribbean family. But they grew up in the United Kingdom, and now they're based out of Chicago. They're a trans-masculine rapper, singer, and songwriter. And oh my god, like seriously, I love their music so much. Anyway, this is Spaghetti by CJ Run. Yeah.
We vibe like, and we get high like, and then we vibe like, yeah. And then we vibe like, and we get high like, and then we vibe like, yeah. Let's get one thing straight, yeah, yeah. Tell me what you wanna do today, yeah. got a minute, but do you reckon we extend it to an hour? Yeah, you got a sweet disposition, your inhibitions are limiting all your power. And I don't wanna drop my guard, but with the way you're looking at me, oh my god, make me wanna take your breath away and turn you on. The way you say my name is not my favorite song, my favorite song. You say you got a boyfriend, but I don't give a damn about your boyfriend. No, you say you want a best friend. No different than you complain about your boy, and all I look is indifferent. Then you compare us, say he doesn't make you laugh like I do, drive you crazy like I do, or get you high like I do. Tell me, what does your guy do? Leave you dry and idle. I would swindle and bridle, follow you like disciple, worship you like an idol, lay you down like needle dust and vinyl, strike on every chord and make your back crack spinal. But you say you got a boyfriend, and I don't give a damn about your boyfriend. You say you want a best friend.
Welcome back to Joy 94.9. You are listening to Trans POV. That was Spaghetti by CJ Run, a really, really cool artist. Last week, we were talking to Lincoln about some of the failures of our Australian public health system. Today, we're talking to Kate Nambiar. Is that me pronouncing it correctly, I hope? About being a doctor in the NHS in England, which is their national health service, and what they do in that country to help trans people, educate doctors about trans people, and essentially combat the sort of issues we were discussing last week with Lincoln. Welcome, Kate. Are you on the line?
Hi, yes, I'm here.
Hi, I'm Rowan, and I'm here with Anna. So first off, you are both a doctor and you have chosen to educate other doctors about trans issues. What made you, was there an event or maybe a series of events that sort of pushed you in like, oh, I need to take charge of this, or I need to be the person to take this on?
I guess so. There's, it has personal resonance with me as a trans woman myself. I lived with having to negotiate healthcare through the NHS and facing some difficulties and facing meeting healthcare professionals who didn't really know very much about what it meant to be a trans person. Even if they had some knowledge about the mechanisms of care, actually understanding what it was like to be a person really didn't quite resonate. And so I kind of took it upon myself to, it's not just, actually when I say that, it's not just me, there's lots of other people who are doing this as well, but I did want to make a difference in raising that awareness of trans healthcare amongst doctors in particular.
So what is the current system in place, or the system you're trying to sort of like create?
At the moment, there's no formal requirement for trans healthcare to be part of medical education within the UK, but myself and many others have started to campaign and to do research looking into how this could be implemented within the medical school curriculum. At the moment, the medical education is incredibly packed. There's so much for students to have to cover that when you talk to medical schools about introducing yet another topic, it becomes a bit of a sort of, oh my God, you know, how are we going to fit this into the curriculum? But we're really understanding that neglecting an entire group of people isn't leading to good healthcare outcomes for them. We've seen that in study after study. So I think that it's vitally important, and we're actually starting to see breakthroughs that we are getting really good quality education put into the medical school curriculum. But it is patchy. It's in places, and that only covers what's going on with medical students. We really need to try to do that for the body of healthcare professionals who are already out there practicing today, and that's an even bigger challenge.
So, hi, Kate. It's Anastasia here. I have looked at the NHS website in the transgender care segment. And
yes,
you guys cover hair removal, genitalia reconstruction, all of that. So, I would like to know how huge and how big was the push, the transgender community, and perhaps led by you, to have those covered?
Just to let you know, Kate, the National Health Service in Australia does not actually cover any gender affirmation.
Any of this? Nothing.
Nothing. There was nothing about it. So I was very impressed.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was really, really impressed.
I don't even get money off my testosterone compared to like a cis man, because women don't need it. I have air quotes.
Okay.
So I have to pay full price whilst they pay like 30.
I didn't realise that. I mean, it's the... The majority of trans people within the UK access NHS care at some point, whether it be only for surgery or for the entire part of healthcare. So actually having really meaningful healthcare for trans people in the UK is such a big priority. It's something that is kind of talked about over and over again. It's one of the sort of big issues that is pretty much always discussed, and I think that for many of us, we do feel that there's a lot yet to be done. Yes, you're entirely right. The NHS does fund gender affirming care right the way through, from hormone treatment to some surgeries, not all surgeries. It should be borne in mind, but it does fund genital surgery for both trans feminine and trans masculine genital surgery. It does fund chest surgery for trans men, but it won't fund anything else. It won't fund chest surgery or breast surgery for trans women, and doesn't fund any facial feminization surgery, at least for most of the UK. It doesn't cover everything, but it covers the majority of the surgical side of things. It covers all of the hormone treatment, and there is some funding for trans women to access laser hair removal, but again, that's not complete. So I think as a sort of package of care, perhaps it is pretty good compared to many other parts of the world, but in terms of the pressure on that resource, that's the difficult thing, because there are vastly more trans people within the UK who need that care and want access to that care than there is capacity to deliver it. And so we're in a situation where we have this enormous waiting list for people who are waiting for their initial assessments and then to go on to therapy, and then eventually down the line, if they want to have surgery, and that's really difficult, knowing that there is a service out there potentially could help you, but not being able to get to it just because there isn't the capacity, or there isn't enough funding really to be able to deliver it.
Yeah, definitely here we have problems with waiting lists for the few services we do have. They get bogged down, and as I understand it, they'll correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm also an Irish citizen. When I've been doing research on how to change all my passports and birth certificate over there, I have heard from a lot of like Irish trans people that they all have to, cross the pond to get anything. So like the English system is weighed down by a lot of like other surrounding countries that have to sort of lean on it.
I think that's certainly true. I don't know whether it weighs down the system, though. There are definitely people who come to the UK who move here, who are from other countries who do use the system, but it is not. I wouldn't say that that's the main reason for it being.
Oh no, definitely not.
wait, Dan. I think we'll be really careful to not point that out. It's one of those things that has been raised. We've got an election coming up really soon, and one of the discussions that's been had is about immigration and the effect on the national health. And generally, my belief is that immigration has actually been beneficial for our country in terms of our
funding is the main problem.
People who work in it, So that's all I'd say in that.
So, Kate, what would you like to see hospitals have as their policies around education for existing members of staff? Because I think we can probably successfully campaign to change training for trainee nurses and trainee doctors. But I remember a story of a colleague of yours who was an anaesthetist, I think, and a scrub nurse kept on misgendering them. And that was someone who had a huge amount of experience. So what would you like to see hospitals do as far as policies for trans awareness?
I think training for trans awareness needs to be part of the equalities and diversities general training that is put out to all members of staff. And it should be something which is, it's difficult to say made part of mandatory training, but it should be something which is valued and thought of as being important within the hospital systems and the healthcare trusts that we have here in the UK. And I think it's really patchy. It depends on who you have working within those organisations as to whether that happens. And the quality of that training, if it does happen, can be really variable as well. For me, I really believe that if you're going to do it well, it needs to be it needs to be delivered at least in conjunction with, if not strictly by, trans people for us as a community, so that people really do understand what it really means. I think it becomes very dry if it's just done as a sort of one of the sort of standard mandatory training e-learning packages, and people just kind of do it as a bit of a tick box exercise. I think it really has to be something which is made meaningful by kind of proper human interaction, and that obviously takes resources and takes time and takes money, and so it doesn't always happen, but that's really my wish. I think it's something that really needs to.
Well, you're listening to Transmovie and Joy 94.9 with Kate Nambia. Thank you, Kate, and we really hope that Australia will keep on bar with international standards, given how WHO scrapped transgender as a mental illness. And I think NHS actually removed that, the psychiatric guidelines, from their website. So, congratulations, Kate. Thank you.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, in the cafe. Did you know that a big portion of people who listen to Joy at work, just like you? Right now, times are very tough financially, and without your support, Joy may not be around to help you through your workday. So tell your next-door neighbour, your friends, and even your dad, to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
In continuing our discussion of sort of healthcare for trans people in Australia and overseas, Queensland just opened their first LGBTI aged care residence called R-Care Parkwood. And I mean, I just feel so removed from this issue, but at the same time, I understand it. But I'm 21, so I don't really understand what it means to be, a person who is even a proper adult in the queer community, let alone
And then with the rate, with how they keep increasing the age limit, for the pension age, I feel like I will never retire,
Yeah, I have to say, I always thought it was never going to happen for me, and now it's getting a lot closer. I do worry. I've heard so many stories about people having to go back into the closet so that they can be, so that they can fit in the care home that they're in. And it's not just care homes, it's also care in your own home, because you've got strangers coming in and you don't know what their views are going to be.
And those like nurses that come to like your home, they can be on a rotation, new people every week. You know, you don't know who it's going to be, and just put down your name as like, oh, can you try and have this or try and have that? Like, it's just almost impossible, and so you're just stuck in the situation you can't fix, which is, to be fair, like true of most healthcare for trans people. You just don't know what's going to happen. Like our discussion last week with like emergency rooms is like very real.
Yeah, turning off someone's meds, that's not good. Yeah, that was shocking, the story from Lincoln. I think as part of my job, I've also met quite a lot of insurance companies that offer these aged care services. And I have to say that the people that they employ, they don't pay that well. And there's not a lot of training given to them, especially the people that are doing the non-clinical services. So I can imagine that you pretty much get people that are not that well motivated and not that well engaged. So I think that this is amazing. I was talking to Jimmy about it at the weekend, and we did wonder, like, is it financially viable to have an LGBTIQ plus care home now? And I'm really hoping that this one in Queensland is just the first.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, you know, in Victoria, we have Dr. Catherine Barrett, who was on the show before, and she's doing amazing work with the aged care sector, and, you know, and the fact that she comes from the LGBTIQ community, it helps a lot.
Yeah, I think it's not just we want services for us, we want to be involved in our own services.
Yeah, and so for me, like, so you guys are too deep for this. Like, for me, my biggest concern when I get older is that I may get loopy and I may keep insisting on getting my hormones, the extra dosage of my hormones, because I might have forgotten it. Then, which would in turn turn me into like a moody freak.
Well, they do say your inhibitions go. So you could be, you know, chasing the young nurses around the care home. I could definitely imagine you doing that.
Like, I haven't had my hormones. I did give them to you this morning. No,
it happens before. Like, it happened. It happened to some nurses I know, that the elderly they look after, they just forgot that they had been injected with something very potent, and they just kept blaming on the nurse of missing a dosage, and they complained. And yeah, so it could happen to any of us.
I don't know. I think I was in the group of people. I didn't think I was going to be an adult. So being like post-adult is even wilder to me. It's hard. I can't conceive it. So you just kind of got to hope that you get there and that the services are there when you get there. And I think with my age group, we might get lucky. But it's not a guarantee, which is kind of hard to think about.
Well, which me, and again, you know, to ensure we have all these wonderful and excellent services. Speaking of visibility, which we really need to raise, in Holland, Almere? Am I pronouncing it right?
Almere, Holland? I don't know. Holland? It's close to Amsterdam.
Yeah, so it's close to where you take your weed in Europe. So they have a trans flag road crossing, the first one in Europe, apparently.
See, I have such conflicting feelings about something like this. Because on one hand, it's like, symbols, I know symbols are important, and I know like that form of visibility is important. I know we have the rainbow crossings in like the north suburbs.
And St Kilda now.
And St Kilda. Kilda. Yeah, and I remember when I first saw that, I was like, wow, what? Because I just don't spend any time in the north, and I'm usually in the middle of the city if I'm doing city things. But I'm also like, is there better ways to spend that money? I don't know. I don't know how much it costs to maintain that kind of thing.
I mean, you know, if we can afford to have fireworks, like extravagant fireworks every year, perhaps it's just a small cost to raise of awareness, you know? It's not that bad versus the rate of crime and suicidal rate amongst transgender diverse people, really.
Yeah, so, yeah, I think it's just like every time I see something like that, I think maybe it's because I'm too utilitarian. Yep. Like, it's sort of my brain just goes,
Mr. Two Pants.
Yeah, Mr. only owns two pair of identical jeans.
Which is good. Like, then you don't have to spend hours, like, planning your outfit for the
like
next day.
I don't to make unnecessary decisions.
But and one thing I'm actually concerned about is that then the extreme right-wing people can say, oh, they are like shoving it down my throat.
It's the backlash that worries me.
Yeah, does it become a target for transphobic graffiti? And
Yeah.
Because, like, I know at least where I live, during the marriage debate, we had one shop that had that sort of like gay people welcome here, which was the comic book store. And I remember seeing that, and it was so good and it was so nice, but they also got flack for it. And then even now, some of those it's okay to say no signs are so far up, so high on telephone poles that they're just still sitting there. But then, like, I always see the, like, oh, you know, when there's something being, like, very, like, openly and provocatively queer, then you just get the people that will come up and spray paint a slur over it. And it's like, well, it's almost worse then. It's worse because beforehand it was at least just neutral, and then it was good, and then it was worse, bad. And I don't know. It's just hard to navigate.
And it is funny how, like, these people are deemed to be, like, adults, and they settle things by... via vandalism, really, you know? And it's going to cost a lot more to clean up the street than actually sit there face to face and talk about it.
Cool.
In other news, we also have, I guess, like, a sort of hard thing. Pastor Paula Williams, she is an American minister. She came out as trans, but at the cost of her family and her job and her friends and her whole religion. And I just think, you know, obviously, like, it's an incredibly hard thing to do, but it also makes me sort of, I guess, bouncing off from that idea, I consider not just, like, religion and being trans, but also, like, the idea of, wow, I've lost my thought completely.
So for me, one thing that I thought was really good with this was it was actually an interview that was on Facebook's chat show. So Facebook have a TV channel now. And Jada Pinkett Smith, who is gorgeous, does the show, hosts the show, and they had a whole show. And I looked at the comments, and we all know Facebook and social media can be a source of trolling, and there were no negative comments. So it was a topic about a religious person who was trans, and clearly either Facebook were really, really carefully moderating the comments section, which is quite likely, but I'd love to think that actually just everyone thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, but I think more it's like coming out, when we sort of talk about coming out as trans or as gay, I suppose, there's always like, I see a lot of, you know, every year there's coming out day, and I see a lot of people being like, oh, you should, you know, coming out is a good thing. And it is. It is 100% a good thing. But it is also, it's like backlash. It's like we can't exist in our own sort of like voice. We always have to be reacted to, which is sort of just very difficult to deal with. I don't know.
So what I'd like to follow up in with this story is like how she views religion after this. You know, like, particularly this journey, because she has such a close relationship with God, you know, and somehow things were taken away from her. Well, not somehow, but, you know, due to lack of acceptance and so, kind of via religion's hand. So it would be great to see her perspective on things, especially religion.
Yeah.
Because there's very much a difference between, like, the structure and community surrounding religion and the actual spiritual aspect of that itself. And I think for a lot of queer people, those are incredibly distinct things that you deal with, positive or negative, in different ways. But they are very separate. And for non-queer people and non-trans people, can be very, like, they don't have to consider the difference.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
And here's a really amazing story coming out of the US.
Mm-hmm. Danica Roem becomes the first trans politician to win re-election in Virginia despite transphobic campaigns against her. So she's one of the many victories the Rainbow Wave gained within the most recent election in America.
Was it a state election for senators? Like,
So each state has two houses, and the Democrats managed to take over. They already had the governorship, but they took over both of the houses.
Oh, hell yeah.
And Danica got re-elected. So she was the first trans politician to be elected to the Virginia state.
Yeah.
And Virginia's in the south of the US, so it's one of those kind of conservative states.
Yeah.
And she was standing against a really lovely woman who was saying that she was going to, you know, a vote for her was a vote to bring a mother into the state government. And Danica pointed out that she too was a mother, and the next thing you know, the trolls online were arguing about whether or not a trans person could say that they were a mother or not. And there were a lot of really high-profile ad campaigns against Danica, saying that she was only interested in passing laws that would progress her agenda, you know, the trans agenda, we all know about that. And she hilariously turned around and said no, she was campaigning for traffic. There's one road there that's always blocked. And she goes, well, trans people drive too.
I think it's just a misunderstanding of, like, how we spend our time. But especially in those political campaigns, you know they're, like, flailing when they can't even... They just ignore all policies. I've never seen a trans person, like, really be grilled on their policies, only really on their existence.
Yeah.
We have another story that has... We've just had an update on the news earlier, actually. The trans-Canadian cyclist Rachel McKinnon, she won the Masters Track World Championship and got a world record. However, there's been a backlash, obviously, from the women's rights groups, from the TERFs. And the UCI, which is the cycling board, are now going to re-review their inclusion rules around trans women taking part in elite sport. So I think it's another topic that we could spend an awful lot of time on around the myths of an unfair advantage and the like, but it's definitely something that we'll keep an eye on.
Yeah, we'll follow up on that next week and see what's happening. Also, what's on?
So a lot is going on next week.
Visibility Week is coming up.
All the states in Australia are, like, doing amazing things, which I am taking part of, really. So first of all, in Out for Australia, so which is a not-for-profit organisation, which I used to volunteer for, they are having a panel of discussion how to be a good trans ally on Tuesday, the 19th of November, so just one day before of the Transgender Day Remembrance, simply because they don't want to take the essence away from the remembrance, so that's amazing. It's going to be hosted at the Origin Energy head office in Melbourne.
So that's on Exhibition Street?
Yeah. And then you have Transgender Awareness Week breakfast in New South Wales on Thursday the 14th from 7:15 a.m. to 9 a.m. at Clayton Utes and Inner City Legal. That's quite awesome, isn't it?
Yep. Then another Melbourne one. So
that's, is it the Beyond the Binary?
Yes.
Ah, yes, MIT University. And on the same day, the 14th of November, so from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. So it's a collaboration between Minus 18 and Transgender Victoria to present the Beyond Binary.
And this was the one that Seb sent us when I asked him if there was anything he wanted to plug. That's cute. Forgot. So this is an event being run by Minus 18, which sounds really cool.
Yeah. And then you have the vigil, the main, you know, the Transgender Day Remembrance itself, which is on Wednesday, the 20th of November from 6 to 9 p.m. At Fitzroy Town Hall. Yeah, I look forward to that, and I think we are going. Well, Ron and I will be there. And it's hosted by, well, imaged is by Teddy Darling, which is a very artistic queer person.
And Miri interviewed Teddy Darling on this spoken word a few weeks ago.
We did, and yeah, and oh, there's also like Alpha Australia. So yeah, it's in conjunction of Alpha for Australia, White Gender, Gender Victoria, and Melbourne Spoken Word. Okay, amazing.
And then in Queensland, we have a Transgender Day of Remembrance ceremony and bridge viewing. So they're going to be lighting a bridge up at the Wilson Outlet Reserve in Brisbane, and that's on Wednesday again at 7:45 to 8:30 in the evening.
They are just trying to, like, outdo us and everything, hey, Queenslanders. Like, we light up the art centre, they have to light up their bridge.
They can keep trying to outlight it until we get the Sydney Opera Bridge, you know, and the Opera House, you know. They can keep doing it until they light up the entirety of every city in the country. I'm fine with that.
That would be amazing, though. Yeah, that would be great. And next week, we also include a guest visit by Michelle Shepherd to talk about her Transgender Diverse Liaison Work at Fitted for Work, which, honestly, I've been under their service and it's amazing. It's really helpful. So, yeah.
Can they give me a third pair of pants?
They can. if you are happy to try on like women's clothing, I mean...
Oh, see, I got rid of all that. That's why I don't have enough clothes now.
No, but they do have pants. They can actually... And remember the topic we had on like women's belt and like men's belt, like the smallest size, like things like that? Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I made a joke about how Rowan's never going to understand.
Never understand what it's like to try and be a woman trying to find men's clothes. Yeah.
So... A fit it for work, like they have like the outfittings, which is awesome. Free clothing donated by very generous people. So yeah.
Another call out, if anyone has an event that they want us to mention on air, then please get in touch with us either on the Joy Trans POV on 94.9 Facebook page or transpov@joy.org.au.
And
that's it for us.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.